WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Keeping the Faith. I'm subbing for Steve this afternoon. My name is Don Nolan. We have a very interesting program for you this afternoon. If you have wondered what's on the cutting edge of research and development in alternative energy, then you will be interested in our program. We're talking to Mr. Sean Denny, who is a recent graduate of the University of Illinois Agriculture Department. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And he has been involved in a very exciting project associated with the U.S. Department of Energy. He was involved last year in a recent entry in what is called the Solar Decathlon House Competition in Washington, D.C., and he's here to talk with us about that project and a whole host of other things related to it. Welcome to the program, Sean.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate you coming on. Tell me if I get this right.
Sure.
The Solar Decathlon is a U.S. Department of Energy international competition.
It is.
And it challenges 20 collegiate teams to design, build, and operate the most attractive, effective, energy-efficient solar-powered house. Have I got that right?
That is correct.
Good. That's what they say on their site, at least. And the winner of those competitions every 2 years, going all the way back to 2002, I think it started?
Yes.
And you were involved in a 2011 competition.
Yes, we were.
Called the ReHouse.
Yes, we were.
You want to tell us a little bit about what that was about?
Yeah, absolutely. The competition, like you said, takes 20 teams from around the world, and each team gets to build a fully functioning house. The house has to be right around 1,000 square feet, has to be completely solar powered, and essentially has to operate in every way that someone's regular house would operate.
Right.
There is a bid process to get into the competition. There was well over 20 teams that entered in, and through a series of year-long ordeals, you get whittled down to 20 teams that actually get to compete in the competition.
How many out of how many all total? Do you know?
I don't know exactly. From what I remember, there was over 30 teams willing to begin the competition that started the bid process.
Mostly from universities?
Mostly from universities, yes. Yeah. A lot of times, multiple universities would team together.
Ah. And how many people are involved in your particular project last year?
In our particular project, in total, there were well over 100 people involved over the course of years, from the beginning of the bid process through the actual completion of the housing competition.
And this is U of I staff and students?
Yes. It's mostly a student-run organization. There are some head faculty that are involved, but they have not near as much input.
Well, the ReHouse is undoubtedly just one of several possible criteria for entry. Which of those criteria did it satisfy? As I understand it, there are several different contests, right?
Well, actually, yeah, it is a decathlon, so there's actually 10 different contests throughout it. And each house has to be a part of all 10 of those.
Mm-hmm.
To get the bid process, your house has to have a purpose. And serve a function for the community.
Mm-hmm.
Our house's function and purpose was to be a house that could be used after a tornado devastated an area and could be brought in very quickly and be used almost immediately to help the restoration process.
Specifically a tornado.
It was specifically a tornado. It's a Midwest-style house.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted something that was close to where, you know, you were from. And here in central Illinois, we've had some issues with tornadoes especially.
Yeah, we're on the edge of Tornado Alley.
We are.
Right. You say there were 100 people involved. This was a student project, isn't it?
Yes, this is a student project.
Tell me a little bit about the Department of Energy's vision for doing this.
Well, I think the real vision is to show the future of what a house can be and how sustainable a house can be.
Mm-hmm.
it is a student-run competition, and, you know, they're really encouraging the youth now to get involved with it, get excited about it, mm-hmm. And just really show everyone in the U.S. and the world what the future can really be like.
Mm-hmm. Just to let our listeners know, this is a call-in program, and we are talking to Sean Denny, a recent graduate of the University of Illinois Department of Agriculture, about the solar decathlon, which he was involved in last year, 2011 entry. It's a biennial,
yes.
Right? How do you say that? Every 2 years, whatever it is. And you all won, right?
Well, kind of.
Yeah?
The what happens is there's the 10 different competitions throughout the decathlon. And you get a point total anywhere from 0 to 100 for right. each of those competitions. At the end of the competition, all of those point totals are brought together. And we ended up in 7th place overall. Yeah. But we did win a couple of the 10 different competitions.
It's always got to be complicated these days.
It's always got to be complicated these days.
Well, this is a call-in show, as I said earlier. If you'd like to talk with Sean Denny about this project, we'd love to hear from you. You can call locally at 333-9455. You can also call an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. We'd love to hear from you. Well, tell me a little bit about how you got involved in this and what your interest is.
Absolutely. I heard about it just around here on campus. It just kind of got brought to my attention through some classes I was taking. And so I started to do some research on it, see what it was about. And then they were holding some classes to actually get started in this, in the engineering department. Mm-hmm. So there was essentially a bid selection for that as well to get into the class. There was a group of about 20 engineers specifically. They got picked to work in the class and on the house.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, there was also an architectural team and an urban planning team that worked on the house.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, the engineers were in charge of figuring out the solar array, all the appliances, lighting, and working with the architects to integrate all these new features into a house that could really work.
Now, you were in the Department of Agriculture.
Yes, I'm in the engineering side of the Department of Agriculture, and that's how I got worked into it.
And how does that apply, what you're studying?
Absolutely. So I study in the Ag Department a lot of actual residential housing features that can be used either on a farm or in residential housing. And so it worked right up my alley to work with an actual house and mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Now, is this intended, let's just say it goes into mass production, not that
sure.
it has, is it intended to be portable, movable?
Yes, absolutely.
Because presumably if it's a rehouse,
yes.
as you call it, there will be several of them that can be moved during a disaster or after a disaster. Is that right?
Absolutely. The entire house fits on a flatbed trailer behind a semi, and that's how it was carted over to D.C.,
mm-hmm.
The entire house fits on one semi-flatbed trailer, and all the components fit inside the house on that. So it can be moved just by one semi to wherever it needs to go.
And this took place in fall of 2011, is
yes,
that right?
Yes, that is
in
correct.
In Washington, D.C.?
Yes, on the National Mall.
Right, and you were there?
I was there.
How many others were there with you?
There was around 30 total. We came in 3 shifts. It's a 3-week-long competition. You get 6 days to build the house. About 8 days to actually hold the competition and have visitors come and walk through the houses, and
okay.
then about 5 or 6 days to deconstruct the house.
So you have to build it on site.
Yes.
So here you prefab it?
Is yes, that is correct.
General idea?
Yes.
So what are all the parts that you have to prefab before you get it set up? I assume you practice assemble?
Yes. Well, kind of. We get it all put together like it would be on the National Mall. The house comes in 2 module sections. So each parts of those modules were all constructed and put together. And then once that was done, we had to build the decking, and there's some canopy sections over the house. All that gets put together, make sure it all fits, and then those sections do get taken off and then shipped over there and re-put back on,
mm-hmm.
as well as some of the internal features. The 2 modules, when they get put together, there's electrical and HVAC systems.
So when you're assembling it,
yes.
I assume there are criteria for competing in that area as well?
Yes, in a way.
Do they judge you for
They don't judge us in the way it's assembled, but it is heavily scrutinized in that it has to be assembled in a safe and well manner, essentially. But it doesn't count for any points in the competition, how it's set up or how quickly it's set up.
All right. It's after it's assembled that it's then judged.
You do only get 6 days to assemble it. What you don't assemble in 6 days, you cannot do anything else to. So in a way, if you aren't able to assemble it in 6 days, then you will lose points in that category.
Now, what was your unique contribution to this project?
I was involved with the lighting and appliances in figuring those out, getting those hooked up, and choosing those.
How did you power those? I assume it's solar.
Yes, everything is solar powered. On the National Mall for this competition, we used there was no battery backup for the house. We weren't concerned about a standalone house in that situation. There was a grid that was built on the National Mall for all the houses. So what they do is what they do in real life here too is they do what they call net metering, and that means your energy meter will spin forwards and backwards.
Right.
So when you send energy to the grid from the solar panels, it'll spin in one direction. And when you use energy, it'll spin the other. And you hope to be at zero or negative by the end of the competition.
Now, do you have energy to spare when you start, or do you have to?
You start at zero.
It's right there. And if
right
it's
at zero.
What if there's no sun?
Then you start negative, essentially.
And that's part of the...
That's part of it, absolutely. We didn't have ideal weather in D.C. for the
next
week.
Question.
And that hurt a lot of teams. You know, we do a lot of...
Some would do better than others.
Some would do better than others, absolutely.
And that would be part of the evaluation. You should do well in so good weather.
Yes, one of the competitions is what they call net metering. If you're zero or below, you get 100 points.
Which is what you were just trying to say.
Yeah, which is what I was just trying to say. So,
okay, and you all did well in that?
We did. We ended with 2 kilowatt hours more at the end of the week than we used.
Why?
Because we did oversize our array very slightly to account for weather factors beyond our control. We do know that it is a week-long competition, and if we have rain for 2 or 3 days, it's very hard to make that up.
Right. So about this project did you learn that you had not known before, or did you all sort of visualize what you knew scientifically was going to go into it? What did you learn
in
the process of getting ready for the competition?
Absolutely. I learned a lot, especially in my discipline of the appliances and lighting. It's really interesting to see what the other teams have done and what I was able to acquire here in the U.S. In terms of appliances, at least. In general, we are very inefficient with our appliances here in the U.S. And not only that, but way oversized.
Even comparatively to other countries?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually had a lot of issues in finding U.S. appliances that would meet the criteria that we had kind of set in place for ourselves that we were hoping to achieve. And I found that to be a little surprising how difficult that was.
And if the public, how do you see what you've learned causing change? Was it significant enough to impact consumers' choices once this information gets known? What do you hope to come out of what you've discovered?
Yeah, absolutely. I would hope so. I see a lot of the issues in just the size and waste that we have right now with a lot of the appliances. I keep seeing, you know, fridges and freezers just getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
And, you know, the efficiency is getting better.
Well, the houses are getting bigger, for heaven's sake.
Houses are getting bigger.
What do you expect?
Yeah. And I think the biggest issue is that as the efficiency is increasing in all these appliances, the size is increasing at the same rate to where you're using the same amount of energy. You're not ever
so
saving energy.
Point of no return there, isn't it?
Yeah, almost. Eventually, I think a freezer will get to the size that it can't get any bigger.
Right.
But at this point in time, not yet.
Not there yet?
Not there yet.
So you're less than worried about size of appliances?
Yeah, I'm just worried about, you know, people being able to save energy by conserving on the things they have and the appliances they have.
Right. Now, you mentioned to me that the Germans came in first on this because they had
that
almost
was the
an
09 house.
That was the 09 house. Okay. So terms of square inches, did some have more solar collectors than others?
Or? Absolutely.
Yeah, so how does...
And it would just depend on how you sized your house, how you sized everything in your house, what you decided to use for your appliances, lighting. And there's hot water competitions, so some use solar hot water collectors on the roof as well as photovoltaic panels. We chose just to use photovoltaic panels for our array.
Right. And the house is soon to be available.
Yes,
for viewers to see.
Yes, we are
hoping.
Tell
us a little bit about where it's located and what people who would like to visit can see.
Absolutely, it's located on South Race Street, right next to where you can get the eggs from the University of Illinois, right on the farm right there. Mm-hmm. It's right next to Race Street on the road. You can't miss it.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, we're still in the process of reconstructing it back. We lost a lot of people that were helping build the house now, mm-hmm. once they all graduated. So we're hoping to get a team back here in the fall to rebuild mm-hmm. it back to what it was.
And you're more or less directing that project?
As of right now, yes.
Yeah. And when will it be ready to see?
Well, like I said, we're hoping mid to late fall it'll be available to have walkthroughs and tours of it.
And what do you want to show off to someone coming in, let's say a typical homeowner or small business owner who is looking for ways to save energy?
We want to show them how normal the house is, essentially. Mm. A lot of people think there's got to be these massive changes and things done to a house to make it so efficient that it can only run off of panels. And the house really looks like a viable living option. Mm-hmm. It's not way out there. It's very...
1,000 square feet or less?
1,000 square feet. Yeah. Right now it's set up for a one-bedroom with an office. That office can be converted into a secondary bedroom if necessary.
And it's essentially zero? Is it zero use?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, like I said, in the competition we ended with an extra 2 kilowatts.
That was the goal, right?
That was the goal, absolutely.
Right. And as houses get larger, 2 and 3 bedroom, is there good evidence that we're close to getting to zero use there as well?
I think there is. I definitely think there is. Technologies keep growing. Prices keep coming down on all these technologies, mm-hmm. Making it hopefully a very viable option for homeowners in the near future.
Yeah. So this is every 2 years, and yours was the rehouse in 2011, and there's another contest coming up next year, right?
Yes, 2013.
And it's moved from Washington, D.C. to Orange County? Is
yeah, California, right? I believe. Yeah.
And as I understand it, there's also a China.
There is.
Project.
Yes, China has implemented a soda cathlon of their own. The professor that was in charge of this, Dr. Xinli Wang, in terms of the rehome for us, he's been integral in helping China begin their own soda cathlon.
Uh-huh.
So we're actually partnering with a college over in China to be a part of that 2013 soda cathlon instead of the U.S. one.
Okay, and this is for future?
This is for future.
Students?
Yes, this is for future students.
And you're not going to be involved in that?
I will not be involved in that one, unfortunately. But
interested observer?
Yes, it will still be open to students here at the university who are interested in it.
Right. Just to remind our listeners, we are talking to Sean Denny, who's a recent graduate of the University of Illinois Department of Agriculture, about his involvement in and current direction of rebuilding of a project associated with the U.S. Department of Energy. It's an international competition called the Solar Decathlon, the purpose of which is to educate students in the public about money-saving opportunities and environmental benefits presented by clean energy products and design solutions, among other purposes. And if you're interested in calling in to talk to Sean, if you have some ideas that you would like to pick his brain with about ways to save energy in your own house or business, he's here to talk to you. The number is 333-9455. We also have an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Do you think that in general this competition that the U.S. Department of Energy has held has had the general impact on research and development nationwide that you would expect? What have you heard?
I believe so, especially for the 2011 competition. Seeing the difference in the houses and the competition level from 2009 to 2011 was incredibly drastic. I think everyone was a little surprised at how much it had advanced in those 2 years.
Oh, really? Since 2009?
Since 2009. And in housing design, in the equipment used, and the general just overall of the competition, there was a huge step taken in those 2 years. It was very impressive.
So you sealed this house completely? Is it?
Yes.
Did you have airflow recirculation?
Yes.
Because there's air pollution issues, no
Absolutely.
Doubt. Absolutely. So was your goal in the rehouse to get it so efficient in terms of construction that you would need less solar collection?
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
So that's the great challenge, or have I got that right?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge in getting a house that insulated. The walls were about a foot thick.
Oh, really?
By the time we were done with them, they were about an R45
wow.
insulation value. Which
the
is,
walls?
The walls were
when
they're
ceilings?
All sitting down. Ceilings and floors were about an R60.
And they were flat ceilings?
They were flat ceilings.
And how did you get to R60? I assume it wasn't fiberglass?
It was a lot of foam insulation.
Spray-in?
Spray-in foam insulation. Yeah, the house, the walls were spray-in foam insulation and then hard insulation, about 3.5 mm-hmm. inches of hard insulation, and what they call a sit panel.
60-inch ceiling. That's...
R60. The ceiling was 60 inches.
How many inches?
I believe the ceiling was around a foot as well, just over
oh,
a foot.
Oh, that's not bad. Yeah.
No. The walls we take into consideration, the window and door values as well, in the
right.
overall, the ceiling is solid.
So you get R60 with 12 inches of foam.
Yes.
Anything wrapping it? What do you put on the...
Yes.
I saw the construction. It looks like you were using chipboard or press board of some
yes,
sort.
Yes, there's a couple pieces of OSB mm-hmm. either side of... the hard foam, and that's what they call a sit panel, essentially, is a 3.5 inches of hard foam
uh-huh.
with two OSB boards on either side of it. And on top of the regular housing construction, we put those sit panels on the outside as an addition.
So you got in the walls, what was it, how many inches wide, 12?
The inside wall, I think we used 2x6s, so there's 5.5 inches
inside. And
that's the
blown-in foam?
That was spray-in, yeah, spray-in mm-hmm. foam. And yeah. then outside of that, we used a sit panel.
Right.
To make the total width about 12 inches or so.
And I assume you did a lot of research on the sections. One of the, as I understand it, primary sources of heat loss is those perpendicular or square corners and
Absolutely.
Sections. What have you learned about dealing with energy loss there?
The biggest thing with energy loss is in most houses, a lot of the energy loss isn't through the actual insulation. It's through any crack in your wall.
Right.
Anywhere there's a crack, air is going to come in and make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest thing you can do is sealing around windows and doors is a huge deal. That's where a lot of your air infiltration comes
mm-hmm.
from.
Mm-hmm.
And again, on all those cracks and corners.
And do you wrap the inside with some sort of vapor barrier that
yes,
is also insulating?
Yep. There's a vapor barrier on the inside. I don't remember exactly how thick that was. It's been a while since I was a part of the actual building of it. But it was a thicker film.
What is it? I'm just curious.
It's a plastic of some kind. It's what most houses use as a vapor barrier. We just use a slightly thicker one.
Got it. And then the floor, because it is portable, you've got the entire circumference surrounded by cold air or warm air.
Yes.
So the floor is insulated?
Floor is insulated as well. Yes,
right.
Since it'll just be sitting on a slab foundation.
Right.
We have, I believe, 10 inches on the floor of foam.
Right. Well, let me ask you a couple of preposterous questions.
Absolutely.
Why should we care?
Why should you care?
That is a
great question. I really think... that things are changing in our environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that we definitely have been a part of that change.
But we've got fracking and new oil and gas resources.
We've got a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of controversy around all those.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of controversy around solar, whether it's worth it or not. I believe it is. I believe there are a lot of different renewable sources out there that are being worked on currently and are in the market
mm-hmm.
that are viable and will help our fossil fuels and our fuels that we have a limited supply of.
Mm-hmm.
There's essentially an unlimited supply of sunlight and wind. It seems silly not to use those.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also climate change to consider as well. But in the current economic climate, we've got political gridlock at almost every level of policymaking in our society. Is your hope that this kind of work will cause a breakthrough so that the consumer or policymakers can't resist it? I mean, there's so much stacked up against the expansion of solar and wind and geothermal
right now. There is a lot against it. That's a great question. It's I always hope that there can be something done to help move it along a little bit quicker. And I think right now everything kind of unfortunately boils down to the cost of it.
Right.
And as I said, it's definitely been going down. The cost of these renewable sources have been going down. And a lot of times politics are worried about right now and not what it's going to be 5 years from now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these renewable sources take 5, 6, 7 years to pay off. And I think there's a lot of issues with that right now. Luckily, we are seeing some good payoff in some of the wind farms right here mm-hmm. in central Illinois. Some have been there close to 5 years now and mm-hmm. have paid themselves off. And I think people are starting to see that. The wind farms have expanded immensely here in central Illinois, mm-hmm. Which is amazing. I think that's just proof of how it
reminds
can start
me,
to work.
This was you overdid it with this particular
yes.
project because you were engaged in research and development more
Correct.
Than anything else. But how much did it cost per square foot for your almost 1,000 square foot?
The entire house ended up costing us about $300,000.
Right.
And that is that cost is what a consumer would pay to build this house, not what we actually paid for it.
Uh-huh. For a one-bedroom?
For a two-bedroom.
Two-bedroom,
essentially.
Okay. I thought you said
one-bedroom with an office is what
okay.
it's set up for.
Okay.
It can be a two-bedroom house.
Right.
But, yeah, $300,000 is definitely a higher number.
And you had $100,000 seed money from the U.S. Department
yes.
of Education. Is that right?
Yes.
Energy, excuse me.
Yes, and that works. That money comes in increments throughout the first essential year of research and development of the house. They give you it in implements if you're able to meet certain criteria.
Mm-hmm.
The architects are really involved with that in the design of the house, in the use of the house and how it's going to play out.
Yeah, I see that among the criteria says the winning team produces a house that is affordable, attractive, and easy to live in, maintains comfortable and healthy indoor environmental conditions, supplies energy to household appliances for cooking, cleaning, and entertainment. That was your area, right?
Yes, that was my area.
Provides adequate hot water, produces as much or more energy than it consumes. That's the net.
Yes, net metering.
Net metering.
Yes.
The affordable one up at the top, mm-hmm. how did you all fare on that with your $300,000 for the rehome?
We did very well. This year's competition, if the house cost under $250,000, you got 100 points.
Oh.
Between 250.
That was a preset criteria.
That was a preset criteria. All the teams knew about it, and that was our goal, obviously, was to get it under $250 as per what a consumer would pay
right.
for the house.
And anybody who did best?
I don't remember off the top of my head who did best, unfortunately. I try not to think of the other teams that much and who
right.
beat us.
Right.
There were a couple teams that did make it right at 250 and just under.
Right.
It went from 250 to 350. There was a 10-point difference there.
Right.
And then 350 to 650, you lost the rest of the points. And then over 650 was no points.
Well, I went down this list of criteria. That's
sure.
what they were, right?
Yes. Yep.
And I'm picking on affordability because we are in an economic
we are in
crisis,
an economic time.
And it would, as you just said, you're placing your hope on cost reductions.
Yes.
So, if this was mass manufactured, mm-hmm. presumably the $300,000 would go down significantly because
yes.
you put so much in terms yep. of products and labor intensity. If you did that, have you all made a projection on what this, let's say you had an order for 10,000 of them for
sure.
the next tornado or whatever, have you made projections on how it could be, what it could be produced for?
I haven't. I wish I had. Again, as we move along, prices are continuing to come down on
sure,
all the stuff we use. The way the house was built is it was actually manufactured by Homeway Homes in a factory.
Mm-hmm.
So the shell of the house, the foam insulation, all the fixtures inside were done in a factory almost in a mass-produced way.
Well, so the students didn't directly build it, or did they go to the factory and do that?
Yeah, they went to the factory, helped out. The very internal shell of the house was constructed by them.
Oh.
Everything outside of that was done by students.
Mm-hmm. By the way, it does occur to me we probably should mention who was your project director, who I assume someone on Department of Engineering at the University of Illinois, or who all was involved?
Dr. Shinley Wang, mm-hmm. actually from the Department of Agriculture, was in charge of the entire competition. There were professors from the College of Architecture, as well as urban planning and a couple others that were integral as well. Mm-hmm. There was a large number of graduate students that served as teaching aides for the classes. Mm-hmm. That were almost the biggest role in getting the house constructed.
Right. Remind our listeners, once again, this is Keeping the Faith, and we are talking about a U.S. Energy Department international competition the U of I has been involved in the past, called the Solar Decathlon, which challenges 20 collegiate teams to design, build, and operate the most attractive, effective, and energy-efficient solar house. And we're talking with our guest, Sean Denny, who is a recent graduate of the University of Illinois Department of Agriculture, about his involvement in last year's effort, which soon will be on display for the public sometime in this coming fall when it is reconstructed. Sean is with us to talk about that project and also about what he's learned or what they have learned from the project and how it might possibly apply to something you might be interested in if you're interested in energy consumption in general. If you'd like to talk with Sean about this project, you can call in at 333-9455. And we also have an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Just take a minute to mention our upcoming programs. This August 12th, our topic is going to be Community Renewal Society, which is a program associated with an organization in Illinois called Protestants for the Common Good. The guests will be public policy advocates Laura Dean Friedrich and Courtney Eccles, who are on the staff of Protestants for the Common Good. August 19th, the topic is The Hope-Filled Parent, Meditations of Foster and Adoptive Children Who Have Been Harmed. And the guest is Michael Trout, author and producer. And then on August 26th, the topic is The SALT Project, a Progressive Community Christianity Experienced. And the guest is Elizabeth Meyer Bolton. My name is Don Nolan. I'm subbing for Steve Shoemaker this afternoon. And once again, we're talking about the Solar Decathlon House Competition, which was last year in Washington, D.C., and the U of I's project did very well in that competition, and we're going to continue that discussion now. We were talking just a minute ago about affordability, and Sean, you'd indicated that the total figure that you ended up spending to get this project finished was $300,000 plus, less?
Just almost right at
$300,000. What did most of that money go into?
It was actually designated relatively well amongst everything in the house. The frame for the house was about a third of the cost. Mm-hmm. And then all the fixtures that went into it and outside of it. We had a deck that almost wrapped around the whole house. There was a metal canopy that wrapped around the house. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the solar panels were mm-hmm. a large issue with that. Also, we haven't mentioned this yet, the water for the house, we get an allotted supply of water mm-hmm. that has to power all the fixtures in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely cost into having a standalone house with
water
tanks.
So in Washington, they give you a set amount of water?
Yes. You get up to 1,500 gallons of water for the week.
Right.
And that is for everything.
I see.
Watering plants, taking a shower, cooking, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. everything. I believe we sized ours well under 1,500 mm-hmm. and met that well.
Do you have to use all of those during the competition? Do you have to? The judges have to see the use?
Absolutely. Yeah, I guess I could have mentioned this a little bit earlier. Throughout the competition, there's 10 different competitions that go on that. Part of that is using the house as it were to be used by a real person. So the lights in the house have to be on for a certain amount of time every day.
Uh-huh.
You have to wash, wash and dry 8 loads of laundry, wash 6 loads of dishes.
Uh-huh.
There are actually 2 house parties where we invite other team members from other teams in the competition over, and we cook for them for a night and watch movies.
Right.
And all that gets factored into the energy use for the house.
Well, we have 2 callers. We have 1 caller on line 1. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question or comment for Sean Denny.
Yes. Is there a website where these structures could be seen and their features looked at?
Absolutely. The Solar Decathlon has a website. I believe it's solardecathlon.gov. You can go on there and look at all the previous teams. The other cool thing is that all of the drawings for the houses are on that site as well. They're public property. So essentially anyone can pick one of these houses and go and build it. All of the designs meet code specifications, so they are legitimate structures mm-hmm. that can be built.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for your call. We have another caller on line three. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment for Mr. Denny?
Hi. I think I've seen that house that he's talking about tonight on Ray Street. I was real interested in the colors. I think it's really stunning from the outside, but it's unusual. And I wondered, was that just decorative or is how'd they pick colors?
That's a great question. That's a great question for the architecture team. They're all about visuals. All the outside colors were picked by them. I'm not sure the exact motive behind it, other than it looks good. All the wood that was used on the outside was reclaimed wood. So I know that was a big part of the reuse part of it. I believe all that wood came from a barn that was torn down in northern Illinois.
Oh, okay. Well, it's kind of funky, artistic. I love it.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you for your call. So when you use this barn wood, did you have to resize it, sand it down,
yes.
restain it and all that?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It took a little bit of effort to do, but the end result was
stunning.
I've done
a little bit of that. That's so time-consuming.
It is definitely time-consuming.
If you care about it, it can be time-consuming, right?
Yes.
Well, earlier we were just moving to a more general question, and that is, why does this matter to you and why does it matter in general? What is it? Let's just talk a little bit about the general impact of this project of yours. What is the Solar Decathlon revealed to be the most efficient or cost-effective steps that we can take in this country on saving energy?
I think there's a number of things. As with most of the houses, the insulation of the house and the air movement in a house is a very, very large part of it.
You almost, well, I guess there's a point of no return, but the general big box store recommendations for insulating just are not enough, right?
They're nowhere near enough. We see the U.S. definitely fall behind very quickly in how insulated a house should be. And again, that does come with the size of the house. The bigger the house, the more it's going to cost to insulate it. But your HVAC system, your heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems account for well over a third of your energy use in your house. Mm-hmm. And any steps you can take to start bringing those back can be really big
right.
on your energy bill.
When you say HVAC, not everybody knows what that means.
The heating, ventilation, and air conditioning.
Right. How important is ventilation?
Ventilation's big, especially when you start getting these houses like this that are so airtight.
Right.
It's almost little to no air movement.
Can be health issues if you
there
don't
can
do
definitely
it right.
be health issues, and that's definitely a concern that people have. Mm-hmm. Houses nowadays, there's definitely a lot of air movement in there, but when you insulate it so well, you have to have air moved through your house forcefully.
So, how did you heat and cool?
We use
in your project.
In our project, we use a special HVAC system that was actually designed by a company that's a couple of graduates here from the university. I don't know all the details of it. The professor was big in working with that. But essentially, it's what they call an air-cooled or air – oh, now I'm going to get the termination mixed up for the viewer, or for the listeners here. It essentially uses the air outside and inside to help keep it even. There's – the incoming air is either heated or cooled by the exiting air as it's moving in and out to help the air conditioner or heater work less.
That's pretty mechanical intensive, isn't it?
It is. But the way the house was built, all of that is very centrally located. So there's very little ductwork in the house.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little ductwork in the house. And keeping everything central was a big part.
Central meaning the unit, the HVAC unit is
in the center of the house, basically.
Like in a closet or something.
It's in a closet, right, absolutely.
Right. Gotcha. So you say that where we fall down the most in U.S. building and construction, even in new building, I assume, construction, mm-hmm. was a standard to 6-inch studs with fiberglass insulation, and then you wrap it with plastic and some house wrap. What else would you need if someone's thinking about building to get to the levels that you're talking about?
I think there's a couple things. The biggest step right now in new construction is moving from fiberglass to closed cell foam and sprayed-in insulation.
Right.
What that does is it causes what they call a thermal break and allows no air penetration. Fiberglass insulation allows air to move through it. Mm. The closed cell foam allows no air through it.
And it fills the cracks in the
wood.
It
fills all the cracks in the wood. And that's the biggest thing, is creating that thermal break in a house.
Can't you do that with good wrapping?
You can come close to doing that with good wrapping, absolutely.
Taping and wrapping.
Absolutely. The R value of the closed cell foam is also quite a bit higher than the fiberglass insulation.
Per inch.
Per inch, absolutely.
So 3.5 inches is R what of fiberglass today?
Fiberglass, I believe is it R19 or R20?
I think that's right.
R22.
It's the lower of those two, I'm sure.
Yes.
And then foam would be?
Foam is 7 per inch. So 3.5 would be 25, 26.
Foam's pretty expensive, isn't it?
Foam is a little bit expensive, absolutely. And again, that's something we're hoping that will start to come down as more of it gets used.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say that's the number one area that U.S. Homes, whether used or new, can improve on. Mm-hmm. What else did you learn? What's the next down the list?
Next down the list definitely deals with appliances. There's
your area.
My area, which is I'd love to mention that we did get first in the appliance category of the 10. So
I don't see a gold medal on you, though.
No, I wish I had one. there is one for it. A lot of people I know have, you know, old fridges and freezers sitting in a basement, and those use a large amount of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Old
like
appliances.
Second appliance.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. You know, almost unnecessary secondary and tertiary appliances, as well as really old units. Obviously, that's, you know, the energy efficiency of those is nothing like they are today. And there's a lot of things like that can be moved around.
Give me an example of a refrigerator that you would buy at a big box store. How do they rate them now? What's the SEER rating?
The SEER rating, I don't remember
what's
the SEER rating is, but there's the U.S. Department of Energy has created 3 tiers for the percentage of energy used for that appliance, the Energy Guide. I believe you can go to energyguide.gov and get ratings of fridges and freezers. Tier 3 is the best.
And what are we looking at there?
We're looking at, I don't remember what the SEER rating is.
18
cubits. Yeah, I believe it's.
Off the tip of your. What I'm getting at is, what did you learn about getting those ratings up?
The biggest thing is the type of fridge freezer, essentially. Mm-hmm. Right now, everyone likes the double door fridge freezer up on top. And the more places that it can open up, the more air can be moved in and out of it. And it's kind of the same deal with the wrapping of a house like we were talking about. The more areas for air to move in and out of it, the less efficient it will be.
So you're saying that the refrigerator top, freezer at the bottom, or vice versa, separate openings is the best choice?
Yes, absolutely.
Right now. Okay.
We find that, unfortunately, top freezer is has the highest rating currently.
Really?
A bottom freezer is second.
I see.
And then double-door fridge freezers are third and then fourth.
And how are they going to be upgraded in the future? More insulation?
What? More insulation, better sealing around the doors, and not increasing the size as much as they have been.
Right. Remind our listeners, once again, we're talking about the project that our guest, Sean Denny, has been involved in at the University of Illinois. He's a recent graduate of the Department of Agriculture. The Solar Decathlon, which is an international competition sponsored by the U.S. Department of Energy. And the project Sean has been involved in was the Rehouse, which is a – describe it very briefly one more time. What is the Rehouse?
It's a home used for tornado disaster.
Okay, and portable.
Portable, absolutely.
Right.
Quick response.
Super insulated, super efficient, and so on. It's several criteria that had to be met at a Washington, D.C. contest. And if you're interested in finding out more information, You can call in at 333-9455. Our 800 number is 1-800-222-9455. Well, what are the most interesting and inexpensive products coming down the pike for current homeowners if they want to talk about retrofitting? What is it that we should spend our bucks on?
Spend your bucks on. Well, for me, I love lighting. That was the other contest I was a part of. And that's probably have to be the most easy to change in a house.
Right.
Moving away from your standard incandescent light bulbs and using right now cost-effective compact fluorescents, the Curly Q light bulbs, have come down in price immensely.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how cheap you can find those for now, almost cheaper than incandescents in some places.
Really?
And your energy saving on those is enormous.
Right.
It's wonderful. Obviously, LEDs are the way we're hoping to go, even more efficient than compact fluorescents.
For people who don't know the lingo, what is an LED?
It's called a light-emitting diode, and they're pretty cool. They're new. They're new-ish, and they're working. We're seeing them kind of in the way that we saw compact fluorescents. They're starting out extremely expensive right now and working their way back.
We have a caller on line one. You're talking to Sean Denny. Question or comment for Sean?
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. One, what role did passive solar play in the design, in terms of making it meet all of the net energy requirements for the week? And then the second question is, what consideration was given to actually dropping a house into an emergency area in terms of possibly not having any kind of grid hookup? So what kind of battery options were considered and that sort of thing? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Thank you for that good question, or two good questions.
Sure. So we'll start with, the second one in terms of battery backup. Unfortunately for the competition, that wasn't an issue. So unfortunately, not a lot of consideration was put into current battery technologies.
Really?
And ways that it could be implemented. And the reason for that was that not all the houses were meant to be disaster survival houses. That was just the goal of the house. It needs to have a purpose, and that was our purpose. But for the requirements of the competition, no batteries were necessary. So we did not put a lot of time and effort into that part of it. If it were a house that was actually going into production, we would have spent, I'm sure, an enormous amount of time on that. But cost-wise and the way the competition works, we weren't able to.
No, I'm surprised to hear that that wasn't a focus.
Yes.
You say unfortunately. Why?
Well, because I think it's definitely a necessary thing that needs to be looked into.
To get more concentration of energy in smaller spaces, right?
Absolutely. And those technologies are being worked on currently in universities and out in the field, but just for this competition, it hasn't been taken into consideration yet.
Gotcha. We have another caller from Urbana on line three. You're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment for Mr. Denny?
Hi. I'm wondering how plants were incorporated into the rehome.
There was actually quite a bit taken into consideration for the planting. We had a number of students working on just the plants that were going to be planted there. All the plants around the decking all had a purpose. Most of them were for food. And so we also had ways of retrieving our water, our gray water usage, and filtering that and using it for the plants so that we weren't wasting any water at all.
Wow. Did you want to follow up on that? Hello?
Water?
Go ahead.
Me?
Yeah, go ahead. Did you want to follow up on that? Did you understand what Mr. Denny said? Okay. Well, thank you very much. We also have a caller on line four. Question or comment for Mr. Denny? Go ahead.
Hello, this is Don McDonald. I live in Kingman, Indiana. I tuned into your program. It's kind of interesting. I was kind of curious of what cooling and heating unit you had in the house. The house that I live in, the air conditioning heating unit is 1974 model, so it's a standard unit. I'm looking at a heat pump, And that's one issue. And basements. I don't think anything was said about a basement in a house. And refrigerators, they're a heat exchanger. In the summertime, when you're trying to cool your house, you have a refrigerator in your house, which is pumping hot air out into the house. I wonder if anything was, in the future, set up for, keeping the hot air out of your house, either diverting it out from your refrigerator, or is it really a big item in the scheme of things? I'll hang up my listen for the reply on air.
Very good questions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. The unit we used for the HVAC system was by a company called Newell Instruments, and I'm glad you mentioned something. It's what they call an air source heat pump. The lingo is coming back to me now. And that's the type of HVAC system we used. And then in terms of the fridge freezer, that would be really smart. You are correct. It is a heat exchanger, essentially, doing that in your house. It would be, in theory, it would be great to get that element part of the fridge freezer outside the house. The issues we have with that, obviously, are thermal breaks in the wall, where those pipes are going to go in and out, and just the general ease of use of...
Well, you're the welder expert on this. How do we do that?
Sealing it, obviously. Mm-hmm. The more you can seal an opening in your wall, right. The better. So
there's no other solution other than sealing?
Not right now. Mm-hmm. It would be a closed system, so that would be an issue. Obviously, the installation of it would be interesting, and it would probably be a very permanent insulation if you did it that way.
Yeah. All right. I think that covered the questions. I'm not sure. Well, let me ask you this question, since we're talking about systems, heating and cooling systems. Right now, trying to get a geothermal retrofit on a existing home is pretty expensive.
It's a little expensive.
$20,000 and up.
Yes.
And it's not that cheap, really, getting wind or solar these days.
No.
Would you say, given what you've learned,
sure.
that a typical homeowner would be best waiting until prices go down, going ahead and paying the higher energy cost, in the hopes that in the long run he'll save by getting cost reductions, thanks to you and your colleagues and all of your good work?
Sure. I would, in most cases, I would say waiting won't help that much. I believe that's kind of the same way as saying, I've got a bunch of incandescent light bulbs in my house. I'm going to wait for them to burn out before I switch to a compact fluorescent.
Well, that's a slightly different degree.
Sure,
we're talking about
a full installation.
20,000. Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Full installation. Yeah.
And the cost savings with that. Mm-hmm. The systems right now have a very long lifespan on them, especially a geothermal system. It has to be built to last if you're digging down 100 feet into the ground.
Right.
So the lifespan on those is 20 plus years, 30 plus years on some.
Mm-hmm.
And so
doing is moving water through pipes.
Yep, absolutely. So there's not too much. I say this, hope, knock on wood. There's not too much that can go wrong with that portion of the system.
Well, the mechanicals on the inside.
The mechanicals on the inside could, but the actual geothermal part of it is something that can be done right away, and I've seen it done, and it definitely has been coming down in cost.
It has.
And again, depends on the size of your house. Right. How efficient it is,
right?
And how many tons you need to move, but it's definitely coming down in cost.
What right now is the mix of solar with compared to other alternatives, wind and geothermal and others?
Absolutely.
Right now in the country, how much are we now relying on solar? It's a pretty small percentage.
Very small. Off the top of my head, I can't remember, but I do know it's around 1% or less.
And do you have hopes, is the U.S. Department of Energy or the University of Illinois people that you work with, that say 5 years from now that will increase significantly?
I have heard that, that five-year mark. I also heard it 5 years ago. It has definitely increased. There are a couple out in Arizona, New Mexico area. There's some large areas that have been designated for solar collection.
Yeah, easy enough out there.
Easy enough out there. Right. And I think the big thing to think about is you have to use your location to your advantage.
Right.
Out there where they get lots of sunlight, solar is definitely a much better option than wood would be, where wind is a little bit lower out there. Whereas here in the Midwest, we get a lot of wind.
Champaign-Urbana is in a wind alley of sorts, isn't it?
A little bit. But so, you know, a good mix here would be fine. We do get a fair amount of solar here, too. Too much farther north, and we're starting to fall out of a good solar area.
And solar, or let's say alternative energies in general compared to fossil fuels, I hear all kinds of numbers.
Sure.
Present day and different numbers 5 to 10 years. It just everything seems to be in so contested politically.
Yes.
I'm not sure what the numbers are. We're pretty well dominated by fossil fuels.
Yes.
What's the figure?
I don't know. I wish I knew figures off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. It's more theories for me, but I do know, obviously, fossil fuels are dwindling, and the only thing that they can do is go up in price eventually.
Yeah, but natural gas reserves are threatening to hold back the alternative, right?
Well,
is that fair?
Yes, that is fair.
I know this is not your area of expertise.
It's not, but I have heard that, yes, absolutely. And it's just, it's definitely going to rely heavily on politics, what gets to go through or not, unfortunately. That's just the way the country kind of works right now.
And there are pessimists who say that what we need is a climate catastrophe. And you are putting your hopes on cost efficiency, right?
A little bit. I would prefer to stay away from a climate catastrophe right now.
Let's hope so. We have a caller on line one for our guest. Question or comment?
Hi. I just called in a few minutes ago.
I hope I didn't cut you off. Go ahead.
Is wind energy allowed in the solar decathlon? And if not, why?
Wind energy, did you say?
Wind energy, yes.
Yes. Wind energy is not allowed in the solar decathlon right now. I'm not sure the politics behind that or the reason it was. I guess part of it had to be they called it the solar decathlon, so
right.
I think they wanted to rely heavily on the solar power for it. And we know that that's a very viable technology that can be used in houses right now. There are, in some places, laws prohibiting the use of putting up a wind turbine at your house, and I think they wanted something that could be done almost anywhere. And solar power is available just about anywhere.
That answer your question? Go ahead.
Yes.
All right. Want to make sure you got all your questions in. That's it.
And also, is any water collected from the house?
Yes. There is water collection systems that go towards watering the plants in the house, the gray water usage of it. Some of the houses in the competition were involved heavily in the rainwater collection. And served a very big role.
Thank you, sir. We have one other caller on line three. Question or comment for Mr. Denning?
Yeah, you mentioned earlier in the program that you were looking for more people to help put the place together, back together. How would we reach you if you knew someone in the community who was interested in helping?
Just about 20 seconds, Sean.
Absolutely. You can go to IllinoisSolarDecathlon.com, and there's contacts in there to get a hold of someone who can put you working on the house.
Okay, and it's okay to be in the community and not a student or anything? Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. One more time, the website, if anybody's interested in this and seeing the project.
SolarDecathlon.gov, and that will give you a direct link to the university's
Very
website.
Good. Sean, thank you so much for
thank
being
you.
With us.
Appreciate it.
We've been talking to Sean Denny, graduate of the University of Illinois Department of Agriculture, about the Solar Decathlon House Competition in Washington, D.C., sponsored by the U.S. Department of Energy. Hope to see you again next week. Welcome to goodbye.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580. This is Illinois Public Media, WILI.